Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
It's Friday the 5th of March. Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the weekend. And this is Game On.
Coming up tonight, Greg Allen brings us up to speed with all the latest athletics in Poland. And we have live commentary of Phil Healy's semi-final.
Yannick breaks away from the block, three from the right, alongside Erez O'Rourke. Also, Berings is going well close here. And it's Yannick, and Yannick takes it.
Jay Mangan reacts to Gordon Elliott's ban and marks our card for the weekend action.
Who'll win the Manchester Derby, Marie? We'll ask our favourite messers, Fergal Breslin and Alan Cawley.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka, powerful run. Good ball across and the head is fantastic from Anthony Martial.
And we join Michael Corcoran live inside Thomond Park as the tensions build ahead of Munster versus Connacht.
And the Everton recovery continues apace as they add to the pain of Liverpool.
And this is the right one.
Liverpool and Thomond, I think they could have a better record.
You were just going to go with that.
Absolutely. You can text us on 5-1.
Forgotten all the good old days.
Not wrong. Leave them playing to the Ballinanti. And okay, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. We would love to hear from you.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, as Jan mentioned in the news is just in that Gordon Elliott has been banned from racing for 12 months with 6 months suspended in order to pay costs of €15,000 following his Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board referrals committee hearing. We've been waiting all day to find out what was going to happen. We now know, and we will be discussing this with Jane Mangan very, very shortly. But first, let's cross over to Greg Allen, who's been keeping an eye on all of the action at the European Indoors. Greg, how have the Irish performed so far today?
Well, it was a real mix of disappointment and success this morning. Schaefer Clary Butner was the highest ranked athlete in any event, and she was third entering the women's 800 metres, and she finished fourth in her first round heat. Just not inexplicable. It happens. Championship running is not like the running that you get when you have a pace-made race in a quiet little meeting in America, in Atlanta, as she had 2 weeks ago to run that Irish record. And, you know, the bumping and boring of a championship athletics really seemed to get to her. She admitted that she was bumped in the race and she just didn't perform anything like what she did in setting that Irish record just, 12, 13 days ago. So she ran 2 minutes 4.4. Her Irish record is 2 minutes 0.5. So way off her best, and she finished fourth and she didn't qualify. Likewise, Georgie Hart didn't qualify. She finished fourth as well in her heat, but she did really put herself up there and she tried really hard and she just wasn't good enough in the home straight. But Nadia Power definitely, obviously, ran the way that she's been running all this winter season, so bravely, all the way up there from the beginning of her heat of the 800 metres, on the shoulder of the leader, all the way through the line, and in the end she claimed that second place. Quite a lot of effort went into it in the home straight. And remember, it's 3 races in 3 days, so it's all about conserving energy. But at the same time, you've got to qualify for the semi-finals. And not only did Schaefer Clary Butner, ranked 3 in the 800 metres for women, not qualify, neither did Hedda Hein, who's number 4 in the rankings this European season of the athletes entered here. So, you know, quite a bit of attrition, but Nadia Power has made it. But I think the best performance of the morning was definitely Phil Healy's 400 metre heat win in 52.00 seconds, 1/100th of a second off her personal best. And her personal best was only set less than 2 weeks ago. So to do that in a morning heat, in a championship, I think we're seeing Phil Healy finally really getting her, you know, her the way that her body is constructed for sprints, 100 and 200 metres. She has all the speed, but the strength has to be added to it. And I think 4 years at this event indoors of the 400 metres has now really paid off, the work that she's done to add the strength, because she went through the 200 metres today in a super fast 24.03, faster than anybody else in any of the heats, by quite a distance, in fact. And she hung on, more than hung on. She looked really strong in the home straight after the second 200 metres. And that's the the first time that I've seen her really put a race together very seamlessly, and it didn't seem to take a huge amount out of her. That's very important, because in just about 25 minutes time or less, we're going to see Phil Healy in the semi-finals of the women's 400 metres, and that's just a matter of, what, 6-7 hours since she ran that heat. So recovery really has been critical over those last 6 hours, but she looked strong, and I think she's going to have a great chance of making it to her first ever championship final.
I've definitely pushed things on. We've explored new areas. So it's great to see the signs of it all coming, because there was years where I have the speed to the bell and don't have the last 50. There's times where I have the last 50 and don't have the speed to the bell, but now I have the two pieces together, and I'm really happy and confident that when I come off the bend, that it's not just like fighting for the line, that I can actually take it home as well.
Okay, she does sound good there. She sounds quite confident. But what are her chances?
Well, her chances are really good. Because she's qualified as a heat winner, she gets a great lane draw. So lane 6 is the softest curve of the bend. And indoors, in a 200-metre track, as you know yourself, Marie, you know, the softer the curve, the better. It's almost impossible to win a medal out of lanes 1 and 2 in the 400 metres. Almost impossible to qualify for the final unless you run a super-fast race out of lanes 1 and 2. And the softer the curve, the further out in the track you go, the better it is. Lanes 5 and 6 are the favoured ones. Lane 6 is what Phil Healy has got. But she does have, you know, some decent opposition. Amma Peepi of Great Britain, she's a 52.07 second runner, very similar in terms of her speed to Phil in the 200 metres, 22.95 for Peepi, 22.99 for Phil Healy. So they're very evenly matched, and Amma Peepi is in lane 5. But Lizanne Duvitte in lane 4, not in the form that we've seen from her in the past, but she is a real danger. She is the Dutch outdoor record holder with 50.72. That's quite a bit faster than Phil's ever run for 400 metres. And Lizanne Duvitte was also the bronze medalist at the last European Indoors in 2019 and a bronze medalist at the European Outdoors in 2018. So she's real class, and she's in lane 4, and lane 4 is a pretty good lane. And in lane 3, even though it's a tight lane, is the young Romanian Andrei Mikloș, who's the world junior championship silver medal winner from 2018 and the European junior silver medal winner from 2017. So she's got medal winning class at underage racing at 400 metres. So that's not really in the territory of what Phil has ever achieved. So she's got really proper challengers in lanes 3, 4 and 5. Only two will make it to the final. But she has avoided the top two in Europe this season, Femke Bol and Lieke Klaver of the Netherlands, both of the Netherlands. So that's a big bonus. She's also missed out on being drawn against Jodie Williams, who I thought looked really impressive in the morning heats. So it's a great chance for Phil to reach her first ever six-lane final, even an eight-lane final outdoors. She's never done either. So it's a big, big hour ahead for Phil Healy.
Yeah, absolutely. And Greg, as you mentioned, there's real competition within the field for her. But just with something you mentioned, temperament for championship running. Have you seen, you know, Phil is saying there earlier on that she's, you know, a little bit different, put everything together. But do you think she has that temperament for championship running? You know, the little things that catch over line, medals count, not time.
I think in the past, we've seen Phil Healy not get it tactically right in championships. And that goes without saying for almost every single athlete. But one of the things I've never seen with Phil is turning up at a championship and running poorly, like running in a way which was just not the shape that she was in the season that she'd put in before the championship. She always seems to come to a championship and then produce something pretty much close to her best, or as we saw today, within 1/100th of a second of her best. She's a good championship performer. In the European Outdoor Championships in 2018 in Berlin, like the 100 metres and the 200 metres are not really the events which we know her for indoors, the 400 metres. But she was semi-finalist in both of those. So, like in her career, she's turned up and she's reached a semi-final of a 100 metres at the European level, a 200 metres at European level, a 400 metres indoors at world level, world championship level back in 2018, and a European indoor 400 metre semi-final. So she's always produced, you know, good stuff in championships. Now we're going to find out, is she going to produce the kind of stuff that you need, not just, you know, what's in your legs, but what's in your heart, those calming those nerves, all of those things. She, I think, is pretty well equipped, and she's proved it in the past.
Okay, we'll cross back over to you for live commentary that in a little bit, Greg, but there are other races on tonight as well that are of a lot of interest to people. The men's 800 starting at 6:55, we're going to have three Irish in those heats, and also at 8:35 the men's 1500 metres final with two very impressive athletes, Andrew Coscarin and Paul Robinson, lining up.
Yeah, well, just deal with in chronological order first. The men's 800 metres will be coming up between 7:30, 7:00, and Mark English will be going just after 7 o'clock, and Mark English is a bronze medalist from the last European Indoor Championships. And Mark has really drawn a very, very tough first round heat. And 800 metres at indoor championship level is three races in three consecutive days. You cannot, as we saw in the women's 800 metre heats this morning, you cannot underestimate the opposition even in the first round. You cannot hold back. You've got to run each race like a championship, unless you're in super fit condition, you know, like Pierre Ambroise Bosse, the French world champion from 2017. You know, he probably has the equipment to be able to look around him and hopefully, from his point of view, you know, take it easy as he cruises to the line, possibly in the heat victory, or maybe not. It could be a very attritional one. It could be slow. Maybe he'll get caught up in the tangle of legs that's almost inevitable at some stage during the heats of 800 metres. So, you know, you've got to be right on it from the start. And Mark has got not just Bosse, the world champion, as I said, from 4 years ago. He's also got three other athletes who are really hot. Patrick Dobrik of Poland is in there as well. And I think as well the other athlete that he has from Spain, Fontes, is going to be very close in terms of the standard that Mark has run this season. So there's four really strong athletes going for three qualifying positions. No fastest loser, no non-automatic qualifying spots from the 800 metres. I think he's going to have a very tough go, a real, really tough heat, and he'll have to just race it like a final to get out of it. Cian McPhillips has a good chance. He's seeded second in his heat, the 18-year-old from Longford. I think, you know, look, we're not going to, you know, judge Cian McPhillips at 18 years of age in his first senior championship on what he does today. But we're going to find out if he has it between the ears, what he has in his legs. And what he has in his legs is he's the fastest junior in 5 years in the world. You know, he's massively talented. And the third 800 metre man we have is John Fitzsimons, who has a bronze medal at the European Junior Championships to his name 4 years ago. So he's a very, you know, he knows how to win medals in major championship, albeit at junior level. So there are three strong 800 metre men going in those heats. And then, of course, at 25-9, we have the final of the men's 1500 metres. You know, Paul Robinson, who was fourth in the European Championship final back in 2014, and Andrew Coskren, who's fifth on the all-time list in the 1500 metres indoors. You know, that's a seriously deep list, and he's ahead of, you know, athletes like Frank O'Mara on that list. So, you know, Robinson and Coskren are leading this charge and this revival in Irish distance running, this middle distance running that we've seen over the last couple of years. I think the Dublin Track Club has a lot to stand for that, because certainly Coskren is a big part of that Dublin Track Club that I know you're talking to Phelan Kelly about over the last couple of days. So there's a revival going on, and it shows with two Irish athletes in a 13-man final of the 1500 metres, in which everybody will be looking at the duel between Jakob Ingebrigtsen and Marcin Lewandowski, because Lewandowski is the defending European indoor champion, and he's from Poland, and this is going on in Poland, and Ingebrigtsen is the European champion at 1500 and 5000 and the European indoor champion at 3000, and he's just an astonishing talent at just 20 years of age.
Okay, Greg, well, we will have eyes and ears on Poland in less than 20 minutes when Phil Healy goes in that 400 metre semi-final. We will have live commentary with you.
Wait.
Talk to you then, Greg. Thanks.
UFM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, we were mentioning, or we mentioned at the top of the show, that the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board has banned leading trainer Gordon Elliott for 12 months, with the final 6 months suspended. This ban will take effect from March the 9th, and the panel this morning convened to decide on what his fate was going to be. I think everybody saw the picture of Gordon Elliott sitting on the horse, and there was a lot of shock and a lot of condemnation because of the image that circulated. Okay, so since then, the chief executive of the IHRB, Dennis Egan, has told Drive Time that Gordon Elliott's ban is proportionate and was arrived at following 3 hours of deliberations, and he says it's now up to Elliott to clarify the sinister aspects of the case. Gordon Elliott has since released a statement just in the last few minutes, and I have to say, I think it was a very apt statement, really, considering everything that is going on and the criticism of previous statements. He said that he accepts his situation, his sanction. He's satisfied with his engagement with the IHRB. He said it wasn't an easy job for them to do at all, but he feels it was dealt with very, very fairly. He admits that he was in this situation because of his own actions and he isn't going to dodge away from it. With my position in sport, he says, I have great privileges and great responsibility. I did not live up to that responsibility. I am no longer the teenage boy who first rode out a horse at Tony Martin's 30 years ago. I am an adult with obligations and a position in sport, in a sport that I have loved since I first saw a horse's race. He went on to say, I am paying a very heavy price for my error, but I have no complaints. It breaks my heart to see the hurt I have caused to my colleagues, family, friends and supporters. I have a long road ahead of me, he says, but I will serve my time and then build back up better. Horses are my life. I love them. No one comes into racing for money, he says. It is a hard way to make a living. We are here because we love horses. Anyone who has visited his stables, he says, will see the meticulous care which we treat our horses with. He was disrespectful, he admits, to a dead horse, an animal that had been a loyal servant to him and was loved by all his staff. He added that he will carry the burden of his transgressions for the rest of his career and that he will never again disrespect a horse, living or dead, and he will not tolerate it in others. He went on then to thank his owners and his staff, who, despite being let down by him, have been unstinting in their support. And he finishes by saying, I will vindicate their faith in me. Now, to discuss all of this, a lot has happened in the last 15 minutes. We are joined on the phone by Jane Mangan. Jane, first of all, let's start with the ban. Wrong one, I brought up Greg.
Let's start with the ban. Yes, well, 12 months, 6 suspended. And initially, when you read the report, Marie, you think that is a €15,000 fine, when in actual fact, if you read the small print, it reads, we also accede to the application for costs by the IHRB in the sum of €15,000. So that €15,000 is not a fine, it is actually for costs. And I think, I'm not sure what everybody else was predicting, but a suspension of his license was generally widespread that that would be a fair sanction. And 12 months with 6 suspended, I think is proportionate. I think this is satisfactory. And the way the whole case has been handled quite swiftly, but fairly, and all evidence considered, Marie, I think this is an outcome that is fair.
He mentions in his statement how sorry he is, and I think everyone is going to accept that, because over the last week or so he has paid a very heavy price for what he says was his error, and he thanks his owners and his staff. So what happens now to the staff and the horses and the owners, Jane?
That's a great question and one I cannot answer. So the commencement date for the sanction is March 9th. Usually there would be a 14-day grace for plans to be made, but March 9th is not that. Is obviously quite different. It is up to the individual owner of each horse whether they want to move them to different trainers, wait 6 months or 12 months. It is completely, entirely up to them, and I can't predict what they'll want to do. As for the staff, it'll all be down to their individual preference. Will they be made redundant? That is a question for Gordon Elliott. All these things are so fresh, Marie. You would have to be worried if you were a member of staff in that yard. But they will know, and they will have known, that this was a likely outcome for the last number of days. And if you can imagine, we were waiting for the statement to emerge this afternoon. Can you imagine the anticipation which they were waiting for the news as well?
Jane, possibly a silly question now, but can someone else pick up that license for Gordon? Could someone in his yard run out the horses from there under that umbrella, for want of a better word?
Well, you can't simply issue a new license. You know, obviously there's a procedure and there's protocols you have to go through. To just get a trainer's license isn't something you can fill out a form and do. Of course, you have the option of a different trainer perhaps coming into Gordon Elliott's and training the horses while he is off for 6 months. All of these are circumstantial. I just reading the detail of the evidence given and the evidence that was portrayed, Gordon straight off admitted that he was in breach of Rule 272. He said he acted in a manner which was prejudicial to the integrity of the sport, and he accepted that his conduct was disgraceful, horrific, inappropriate and distasteful. So the manner of this has been swift because of his cooperation, and I would imagine all factors would have been taken into account. There is a line, part six of the statement says that Mr. Elliott has already suffered and will continue to suffer punishment. These punishments include serious damage to his reputation, substantial economic loss through loss of business contracts and the departure of horses from his yard. And there was also evidence taken from Dr. Pugh, which considered his health. So this was is a massive and obviously a significant case that has been discussed widely since the picture emerged on Saturday evening. And for it to have concluded today, I think everybody has been through a roller coaster.
I'd imagine, Jane, you know, with Cheltenham looming and all the rest and racing being so busy right now, it's a bit of a logistical nightmare to try and for owners to try and sort out and decide what to do.
Yes, well, it would have been a big decision earlier in the week for Cheveley Park to move their horses so close to Cheltenham. Obviously, it's not ideal when you consider the change in environment, the change in routine and the change in personnel working with the horses. But ultimately, they would have known that it was unlikely that Gordon would be able to train horses for Cheltenham, and they made the initiative early, and some other owners will be taking that into consideration now. But again, it's so fresh, the news is so fresh, I think people will have to take stock of their individual situation and work from there, and it'll develop again over the weekend and into early next week. I would like to note there's obviously a section of this statement that it is important to note that this incident is not one of cruelty to animals. There was evidence heard from Angorda Síochána and from Sharon Power, CEO of the founder of the Irish Horse Welfare Board, and it is not suggested that the horses in Mr. Elliott's care are maintained and looked after in anything other than to the highest standard, confirmed by witnesses we have heard from, including veterinary evidence. And in our view, the success of Mr. Elliott is a testament to the care and attention provided to his horses. So that is an important factor to negotiate as well. But again, Marie, we were discussing throughout the day whether there would even be a verdict on Friday evening. We got a verdict, and I think when people consider all the evidence and the punishment, I think is fair.
Jane, the ban was for 12 months, suspended to 6 months. What would lead to that suspension?
Well, what leads to the suspension is the crime committed, and that crime is that he broke Rule 272 and brought the sport into disrepute. The BHA have actually tweeted that they are aware of the outcome of the IHRB investigation and will themselves be making a statement later this evening. So we await that. But ultimately, Gordon Elliott has cooperated fully with the investigation, and he has accepted what he did was unforgivable and indefensible. And that no doubtly contributed to the swift nature of the verdict being revealed.
Jane, he says in his statement, "I have a long road ahead of me, but I will serve my time and then build back better." Do you think he'll be able to come back from this?
I think he has the right to rebuild his life, as anybody does. Once you serve your penance, you have the right to rebuild your life and your career. And he has shown through the last 15 years that he has an unbelievable talent to train horses. I think 32 Cheltenham winners, 3 Aintree Grand National winners, and consistently up there with Willie Mullins challenging for championships here in Ireland. So Gordon Elliott will serve his penance. He has the right to rebuild his life, as I say. And after this, we can all only try and learn, as bad as a situation as this was for the industry, we must vow to learn and do better. This is not something that we accept in our industry. In Ireland and across the world, the horse racing and breeding industry is built on a foundation of love, devotion and care to the animal. And that is what we expect across the board. And this was unacceptable, and it has been dealt with accordingly.
Yeah, and we've felt that all week with the likes of yourself, Ted Walsh, Ruby speaking so eloquently about it. Jane, there was good news this week, and unfortunately it was kind of drowned out with all the noise, rightly so. But Holly Doyle was brilliant this week, and just looking forward to this weekend. What are you excited about watching?
Yes, well, it is nice to talk about racing, and Holly Doyle is the shining light in racing at the moment. I think before her five-timer at Kempton last 2 days ago, she was the only rider to have ridden five winners before that, when she rode five winners at Windsor last year. So she is not, it is not a one-off for her. That is the second time she has achieved that record, and of course she's the only woman in Britain to have done that on the flat. So the highlights for me this weekend, there's good racing in Kelso. We saw Emmett Mullins to great effect at Ascot last week, with Cape Gentleman winning for him, and he's actually going for a UK double this weekend with the Shunter. So the Shunter runs in the Moor Battle Hurdle at Kelso tomorrow afternoon, and were he to win here and win at the Cheltenham Festival, he would be entitled to $100,000 bonus. Shunter has multiple engagements at the Cheltenham Festival, and he is favourite for the Moor Battle Hurdle. He's been mixing it over hurdles and fences of late, but he did win the Great Wood Hurdle at Cheltenham in the autumn, and we know he travels well. Alan Cawley is on board for Emmett. He's got a rating of 135, and he think he's top of the market, but he's top of the market for good reason.
Alan Cawley, he's on with us after the break, Jane. He's the last fellow to put in a horse.
Yeah, if that Alan Cawley was on board, we might not take the 2-1.
We'd absolutely be in trouble. He'd look stylish. Jane, as always, thank you so much for joining us and always speaking so well. We'll catch up with you soon. We're going to take a quick break, and we're back with Alan Cawley and Burger Bell.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to talk football, and we are going to get stuck into Liverpool very, very shortly. But first, I want to chat about the accidental handball, or the handball rule change. So now an accidental handball that leads to a goal-scoring chance or a goal for a teammate will no longer be penalised. Fergal Brennan is with us, and Alan Cawley. Alan, is this the right call?
Oh, absolutely, Maria. And wait till I see Jay Mang and slagging me off about my ride tomorrow. I'll have words about that now, I have to say.
You'd be the stylish jockey we'd ever have seen.
I had a chuckle to myself there when she mentioned my name. I was like, I'm not going to Kelso tomorrow to ride a horse.
I wouldn't put it past you, Alan.
But yeah, Marie, just getting back to the rule. Yeah, funny, I was watching the game last night with Fulham and Spurs, and I'm a fan of Scott Parker, and they played quite well. And when they equalised, I thought, brilliant, now they're back in the game, they have a chance to go on and get 3 points. And when I saw the goal being disallowed for what it was disallowed for, the accidental handball, I just thought, where is football going? I tweeted about it, I was really annoyed. And I was so frustrated by it, and this rule has frustrated me all year. And to be fair to the ref, he was going by the letter of the law. It's the silly law that's in place. It wasn't his decision. But the accidental handball, for a goal to be ruled out, and a goal that would have had such importance for them as well in terms of the fight for survival and staying up, and they obviously got penalised and ended up losing the game. So I saw today when it was announced that they're going to take that rule away now, and obviously there'll be no goals disallowed for accidental handball. I thought finally somebody has seen sense, because it was absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, well, just to clarify, that handball rule doesn't come in until the summer. Now, Fergal Brennan is with us. Fergal, I think we just need to have a very quick look back at Liverpool-Chelsea last night. Look, I don't even know where to start, really.
There's not a lot of positives, really, to take from this from a Liverpool perspective. And I think based on recent results, Liverpool fans will have looked at this and thought, they're kind of getting back on track. The Leipzig win in the Champions League was a big one for confidence, and there were signs with players coming back to fitness that some sort of normality was returning to Liverpool's season, and that's been thrown in the bin by the result last night. I actually think, despite results being quite poor for Liverpool of late, the performances generally have been okay in patches. This was actually probably their worst performance. They allowed Chelsea to dominate the ball. They allowed Chelsea to have the better chances. They only had one shot on target for the entire game. And we're starting to see players that have still had good...
Fergal, I'm actually going to have to continue this torch temperature in a few minutes because we need to cross over to Greg Allen because Phil Healy's about to go off.
Go on,
Greg.
Phil.
Yes, in this women's first 400 metre semi-final, we have Phil Healy out in lane 6 and all the athletes have been introduced, not to the crowd, but they've just been introduced for TV purposes and they're all in the set position for this first women's semi-final of the 400 metres. And they're away first time and Phil Healy very sharply out of the blocks as though it's a 100 metre race, but that's one of our strengths, out of the blocks. And one of the things that you see with Phil Healy is her first hard, fast lap. She likes to get into position either first or second at the bell, so to speak, with 200 metres gone. And at the moment, it's Phil Healy being run down quite seriously by Ama Pipi of Great Britain, and also Miklos of Romania in lane 4 has slotted into third position, but Pipi leads at the bell. 180 metres to go. Phil Healy in second place. Two will qualify by right for the final. Phil Healy has never qualified for the final of a major championship, and she's right on the shoulder of Ama Pipi in second place, claiming one of those positions. And Miklos in third down, now putting some pressure on Healy, but it's still holding firm on the bend. Phil Healy out in lane 2. Does she have the kick to hold on for this? Will she take the victory? And Phil Healy has tried to take this victory, and it looks like she's going to get it. Coming up on her is Miklos, and it looks as though Healy may just have got first place, but if she hasn't, she has definitely got first or second. And Phil Healy is into her first ever major championship final. She has done it the hard way, and she's done it in 52.41 seconds. Now, that's not a personal best, and she's been given the heat victory. Hugely important, because the semi-final heat victory gives her almost the insurance of lane 4, 5 or 6 in the final, and Phil Healy has done it. And after reaching a European 100-metre semi-final, a European 200-metre semi-final, we've seen a World Championship 400-metre indoor semi-final from her, and also a European Championship 400-metre semi-final indoors. Here she is, holding on. Miklos closed so hard on the line that it must have been no more than inches, centimetres, 2-3 centimetres. Pipi looks like she's been run out of the place in the final, having done so much of the hard work, by about maybe 35-40 centimetres. So close, three of them at the line, and Healy has been given the victory. 52.41 seconds for Healy, 52.41 seconds for Miklos, and 52.54 for Ama Pipi, who's been run out of the place in the final. And it's confirmed, Phil Healy has just won that first semi-final, and she runs in the final tomorrow. Terrific news.
Absolutely fantastic, Greg. Thanks so much for taking us through that. And it's highs and lows of sport. Now it's back to Liverpool. It's really difficult for you.
Yeah, well, that's the magic of live sport. Obviously, as I say, the Chelsea game last night for Liverpool is just another blow for confidence. And I think, particularly from a player's perspective, we saw Mo Salah was very angry after he got substituted. And I think we're starting to see players who still had good, or at least good patches this season, including somebody like Salah, who's still their top goal scorer and still enjoying a fairly strong campaign, starting to become frustrated because the results that you're expecting to come, the kind of corner to have been turned based on the Leipzig and the Sheffield United result, just hasn't happened. And there was no kind of bad luck about this last night. They deserved to lose. Chelsea, with a better team, had a much better tactical plan to get 3 points. And Jurgen Klopp's very frustrated at the end of the game because he's got another injury to deal with now. Ozan Kabak's likely to miss out against Fulham on Sunday. And he, for the first time, almost looks as if he doesn't have the answers either. So I think it is a very frustrating situation for them to be in. Obviously, they've got Leipzig then again in midweek. That game's been moved to Budapest for the second leg for the second time. And it's a very, very frustrating period for them because you look at the games coming up, and obviously Fulham this weekend, who are battling relegation, you'd normally have that down as a banker for Liverpool. But based on the way that they've been playing and based on their results at home, they've drawn at home to West Brom, they've lost at home to Burnley and they've lost at home to Brighton. There's absolutely no assurances that this is 3 points in the bag and a renewed push to get back into the top four.
For Alan Fergal's point there, five league losses in a row, making history at home and down to seventh place. Are the wheels coming off a little bit here?
Yeah, I watched the game last night, Donegan, and I have to say I was disappointed with Liverpool, and I think it's gone past the stage now where you can just focus on the injuries. I think there's probably a lot more going on, and they just look so toothless in attack. Now, this team has been on the go. They've been relentless, really, for two and a half years. I do think the injury to Jota has had an impact on the front three because Liverpool were so reliant on those front three, and particularly in terms of not only scoring the goals, but also how intense the press comes from them at the top of the pitch. And the fact that Jota came in and hit the ground ground running, and he was allowing them to rotate and leave one of those players out to freshen things up. Once he got injured, they were back playing the front three continuously, and they don't have the same zest or energy about them that we'd associate with Liverpool over the past 18 months, 2 years, and in terms of them going out steamrolling teams. They just don't do that anymore. And I felt Chelsea, to be fair, did a number on them last night. They were very, very comfortable. They never really looked troubled. As Fergal said, they had a better tactical plan going forward. Every time they went forward, they looked like they were going to score or create a chance. So I think Klopp has major worries, not just the injuries and the defensive issues, but also how toothless they are going forward.
Yeah, it does seem like there is a lot to sort out. Not just, it doesn't even matter about all the different centre half options. It's all around the rest of the field that the worries are. Okay, Fergal, let's move on to the big game on Sunday, the Man United Man City derby. And I have to say, just looking at the way Man City are playing, smiles on their faces, they're a bit like they're back like they were the Harlem when they were being compared to the Harlem Globetrotters. They just look completely unstoppable. How daunting is a prospect is it now for Man United?
Well, United fans will be kind of clinging to the fact that Solskjaer has quite a good record since he's come in as United boss against City. He's not lost to them in the Premier League as United boss. But as you say, the way that City are playing at the moment, this is a completely different City team to one that he's ever faced since he's come into the job at Old Trafford. And they just look to be rolling on. This would be the 22nd win in all competitions in a row if they get 3 points. But the numbers almost don't mean anything at the moment. And this is first against second, but it doesn't really feel like that, given how good City have been playing and the fact that they are just light years ahead of everyone else in the Premier League at the moment. And whilst we know that the title race is effectively wrapped up at this stage, if City do win this game, that would mean that if they stay on course, given their form of late, that they could win the Premier League with 5 games to go, which would effectively cut their season into 2 sections, because the Champions League semi-finals, the League Cup final and the FA Cup semi-finals would all be after that mark. So they could mathematically have the Premier League completely wrapped up with absolutely no chance of giving it away, and then being able to concentrate on just making history and winning the quadruple.
Alan, Ollie's getting a lot of stick for playing it safe, but this isn't the game to go out in all-out attack, isn't it? He could come up really short. It's difficult for him.
Fergal touched on there about the success that they've had against Man City. Solskjaer in particular is the fact that he sets up in that counter-attacking way and looks to pick them off, and he's been successful with that, with the pace that they have on the break. Whether that'll be the case on Sunday, I'm not so sure, Dunica, because Man City are just in imperious form at the moment. They will dominate the ball, as we see in most games, but United are also, like touching on what Liverpool were, United are also looking toothless in attack over the past 4 or 5 weeks. So do they have enough to maybe create those chances, or on the counter-attack look like they'll trouble a Man City defence that's only conceded 17 goals? They've been in unbelievable form, not only going forward, but Stones and Diaz at the back. Even Laporte has come in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he has the luxury of chopping and changing those, and they still look so good at the back. So I would agree with Fergal. It doesn't feel like a first against second, and that's a great point also that Fergal makes about the fact that the debate has turned out to, can Man City win the 4 competitions? And when you outline it the way Fergal has, in terms of the fact that they could have the league wrapped up with 5 games to go, then they can rest players in those last few league games and concentrate solely on the Champions League and the Cups, I wouldn't put it past them winning all the trophies in the current form.
Fergal, at the other end of the table, it does feel like a right battle. You can almost sense the tension, particularly at Newcastle. But today, West Brom boss Sam Allardyce said that he thinks that conflict can sometimes act as a positive catalyst, and that the rows at Newcastle show that they have a fight for a relegation battle. I'm not so sure about that. What do you think?
I think that's a little bit of old-fashioned mind games from Sam Allardyce. He knows exactly what's going on at Newcastle, and obviously Steve Bruce is under massive pressure, and despite the fact that West Brom are lower in the table, he's under less pressure because of the expectations around Newcastle that the fan base do have. And West Brom are struggling. I think Sam knows the situation, that they're almost on a hide into nothing unless they can really, really turn it round. But based on the way the two teams are playing, this one's not going to be the most exciting game to get your weekend started in the lunchtime game tomorrow. But I quite fancy West Brom, because I just think everything surrounding Newcastle at the moment is so negative, and there's very few things that you can look at and say, well, there's a spark there, or there's a bit of positivity there, because Callum Wilson, their top goal scorer, is out injured. Joel Linton can't really be relied to fill that gap. So you don't really see where they're going to get the goals or get the momentum. And West Brom have set up a system where they don't need that sort of spark. They know that their chance for a goal is going to be a set piece or a throw-in that gets flicked on. And Allardyce knows that. He'll play on that. He'll play on the fact that there's a lot of negativity swirling around Newcastle. And I fancy West Brom to get a positive result and just suck Newcastle in a little bit deeper.
Okay, well, we will find out a lot over the weekend. Alan and Fergal, thanks so much, as always, for joining us. We'll chat to you next week. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with rugby.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Okay, tonight's Interpro clash with Munster and Connacht is as good as a semi-final, and who better to handle the pressure than the Dan Carter of rugby commentary, the voice of our game, the one and only Michael Corcoran. Corky, how are you?
Oh, I tell you, like...
That's special. That is a special
intro. That is now, like, I was going to say speechless, but I'm not. I'm just surprised. I'm grand.
Put that on your Twitter bio, actually. That would be good.
The Dan Carter. What did you call me? The what?
Dan Carter.
Yeah, but he's retired. Dunners, he's retired.
Brilliant. Can I come in with the chop tackle now? Can I ask, have you rolled out the spring summer wardrobe? Or are you still in that lagging jacket?
I haven't rolled. Last weekend I had the spring summer wardrobe out and I was really looking forward to everything. Then, as I always do, I checked the weather forecast from a couple of days out and the lagging jacket was about to be put away, but it's made a reappearance for tonight and indeed probably tomorrow night for the Kingspan Stadium as well. It's bitterly cold, to be perfectly honest, but it's a perfect evening for it, actually.
Brilliant. We'll get into the game, but we've been chatting all week about contracts and good news again today. Keane Healy, Ireland's most capped prop, has signed. Brilliant, Michael, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's a wise move indeed. You know, for the Irish Rugby Football Union to tie players like that in, Keane Healy, Johnny Sexton, and Peter O'Mahony, captain of the team down here, it's good. It gives them certainty for, you know, in some cases the next 12 months, in other cases for the next 2 years. You know, and I mean, people kind of wonder, you know, there's a kind of raging debate whether somebody should get a central contract or otherwise. Well, the situation is, from a financial point of view, I would imagine that, you know, the players are on pretty decent money. I don't know how much, but, you know, if that was to fall back on, say, Munster here, or indeed Connacht, or Ulster, or Leinster, would they be able to afford to pay the player themselves? So that's one of the reasons, or maybe there's one of the strands that fellas need to be paid by the Irish Rugby Football Union in a central contract, as distinct from a provincial one.
Tonic, all week you've been explaining to me why certain people are getting certain length contracts. Ben Healy, 1 year contract. What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, I was interested in that as well. I wonder, is that Ben as well? You know, sometimes we always assume the player wants a long contract, but I wonder, is he looking in front of himself and saying, okay, if JJ's there and, you know, if Joey's coming back and I'm not getting any time, let's bed down for 1 year. I wait it out and see where we are at that point.
So he's the opposite of the lads sitting on the bench with the long contracts.
It's amazing.
Not getting any game time.
The older you get, you want the longest contract you can get. You're there. Well, how we fix here for a 5 year? And like when you're young, you're there. Could we make that 6 months and we'll have a look at it? So, but it is. I'm delighted for Keane Healy because I don't think we value him enough. He's another guy that we're going to say when he's gone, what a massive void he's left. He's work rate, his capacity to get through stuff is incredible, and it's a brilliant signing. And on top of it, he is an unbelievable teammate.
Dunners, yeah. Can I just make a point there in relation to Ben Healy, who I'm looking at on the pitch in front of me here? You know, you're in a situation where it may not necessarily be, as you said, and Marie is right as well, it may not necessarily be a situation that he was only offered a 1 year contract. I mean, that's the contract that's been agreed, you know, and that ties him to Munster for the next 12 months. Now, it's good work from his point of view, from his agent's point of view also, because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. He's guaranteed income for 12 months, and he's also in a situation where, you know, fingers crossed, everything goes well with crowds coming back, you know, finances beginning to flow back into the game. Therefore, there's a bigger pot of money to go around next year. So rather than being sort of tied into a 60% of what you think you're worth for 2 or 3 years, is it not better to get 60% for the first year and then maybe get 100% of what you want for the years after that? You know what I mean? And I just don't think we should look at a scenario either with the likes of Keane, with the likes of Johnny Sexton, that, you know, that they've signed one-year contracts, but that doesn't mean they can't sign another one-year contract in 12 months, you know, after that one is finished. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the road from their point of view.
Absolutely. We used to say it, sign one-year contracts for as long as you can. Just on it, I've never seen such excitement about the halfbacks tonight for Munster. Ben Healy and Craig Casey going out together. If there was a full Toman Park, Michael, they'd be going crazy for these two guys.
Yeah, they would. And you know the thing about it, I mean, Ben has been there all season. I suppose if you look at, you know, the reaction from his teammates, even when he kicked that winning penalty against the Scarlets, which seems like 4 years ago at this stage, but incredibly it was only towards the middle of last season. He's been kind of so he's been around for that longer little bit period of time. I just think, I mean, when you see Craig Casey, I've never spoken to the fella in my life. I've seen him play. I've spoken to loads of people about him. You know, Andy Farrell, Graham Rowntree, people who are respecting the game, and they're saying, you know, every team meeting, he's up at the front, he's got his notebook out, he's got a biro there, he's taking notes, he's asking questions, he just wants to improve himself all the time. And he's just a player I think that people, coaches certainly do. I saw Johnny Sexton speaking very highly of him after the win against Italy last weekend. People have taken him to their hearts, and you're right. I mean, imagine if there was 26,000 people here for this game tonight, the reaction that you know, Ireland's newest international would get when he runs out alongside Ben Healy.
Donica mentioned earlier in the week about his dad, Ger, and interestingly today, Munster Rugby put out a clip of Ger just talking about Craig's development and when he realised that maybe he was going to make it as a professional athlete. And it was just fascinating to hear him say that no matter what sport he played, he just wanted to become a professional. He was playing loads of different sports, and then obviously he went on to specialise in rugby. But it was just an interesting clip to check out.
Yeah, and I mean, he does have, as I said, that diligent attitude where he just wants to improve himself. He wants to be better. He wants to challenge himself all the time. He doesn't appear to me as if he is a comfort zone. He's trying to be better all the time. And, you know, rather than people sort of saying, oh, you're a scrum half, gosh, you know, Conor Murray is there now. Yeah, gee, I don't know, you're going to get in. His attitude is, well, that's fine. I just got to be better than Conor Murray. So if you want to pick me in the team and make it difficult for people not to pick me ahead of the more established stars. And he's like, he's pushing himself, he's pushing his teammates, and he's pushing his coaches to make big decisions about him.
Corky, they're going up against real quality tonight in Caelan Blade and Jack Carty. And you look at the Connacht team, yeah. Bundiaki coming in, Dave Heffernan, Ulton Delan, in a must-win game. Connacht will bring it.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at their back row, Jared Butler, Paul Boyle, Conor Oliver, a man who knows this part of the world quite well also. Connacht, you know, I've seen them an awful lot this season. Away from home, their form has been brilliant. I mean, they did a number on Leinster in the RDS. They're in a situation, as you know, 9 points behind Munster. They're nearest and dearest in terms of Conference B of the Guinness Pro 14. And Andy Friend has got them playing really good ball. They probably should have beaten Munster up in Galway over the Christmas games. They had a scrum late in the match and just got their messages mixed completely as to what they were going to do. And I think that the Connacht team that is playing here tonight is way stronger than the team that almost beat Munster up in Galway you know, a couple of weeks ago at this stage. I think, yeah, like you've mentioned Bundy, yeah, he'll be sore that he's not involved in Ireland match day 23. Tom Daly is a player who's having an absolutely terrific season for Connacht as well, as is Gavin Thornbury in the second row. So, like, there's head-to-heads all over the place, to be perfectly fair about it. It's a must-win game from a Connacht point of view, and that, to me, makes them very, very dangerous.
Just on that, that pressure of it, you know, it's as good as the semi-final. Connacht lose, they're as good as gone, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, you would think that's going to be that would be the case. Obviously, they have a lot to play for in terms of the Challenge Cup and the draw for that next is it Tuesday or Wednesday I think of next week. So they'll be looking at that, and they'll be looking at teams, as indeed Ulster will also. They'll look at the Challenge Cup, even just speaking specifically about that, and they'll look at some of the teams who are involved in that, and they'll think, you know what, I think we could beat the majority of teams in that competition. So there's a pathway to silverware for both Connacht and Ulster, even if it's not in the Guinness Pro 14, certainly in terms of the Challenge Cup. And that's before we've even mentioned the Rainbow Cup, which everybody assumes at this stage is going to go ahead.
Michael, I'd love to be there tonight, and we spoke about the ovation someone like Craig Casey could get, but Joey Carberry coming off the bench, do you think he could get even more time tonight?
It was interesting to listen to Johan van Graan during the week, and he said they're not going to rush him, you know, because the worst thing in the world they could do is rush Joey Carberry back and give him more time. I mean, there were some people saying, oh, you know, he got a cameo last week. His kicking action for me, when you know, the way he actually kicked the ball for the conversion in Cardiff, it was just so relaxed completely altogether. I think they'll manage his minutes. You know, there were some people suggesting maybe he should even start tonight, but I think he's well away from that. I think they'll manage him over the next period of time. Probably give him more minutes tonight. That's the reality too. But, you know, to be fair, it's also sending the right message out to Ben Healy also, that, you know, yeah, Joey Carberry's back, but Ben Healy's been there all season, and he's done it all season from a Munster point of view. So he deserves his shot. And Joey, talented and all that he is, and super athlete that he is, has to force his way past Ben Healy when it comes to it as well.
Donegal, you must be really enjoying all this competition for places in Munster.
Yeah, and I think what we saw even out of Andy Farrell is that players will get rewarded for playing well with their provinces. And we would have seen it with Jack Conan. It's an unbelievable game over the last few weeks. And then he gets involved in the Italian game. And that's why I think, the likes, as you were saying, Corky, the head-to-heads tonight will be incredible. The likes of Bundiaki up against Chris Farrell, with Delande coming off the bench. I know he's not Irish qualified, but just for younger players around the squad have that quality around them. I think, you know, guys have an opportunity tonight to put up their hand for Irish selection.
Yeah, they certainly do. And I mean, if you look at even just, I mean, I'm looking at the Munster players, Joey Carby in front of me here now, just lining up a penalty from the 10-metre line. You look at some of the upgrades in contracts that Munster gave during the course of the week, and I just think, you know, there are players, obviously we haven't even mentioned Gavin Coons, save us, like one of the leading try scorers in the competition this year, but a fellow like John Hodnett, I just rate him so highly, I must say. I think he's a tremendous player, and I'm thrilled to see that he signed a 2-year senior contract with Munster. He's a man who, you know, provided he gets game time in Munster, you look at a fellow like Scott Penny in Leinster, exactly the same scenario there. We have such strength and depth coming through in quite a number of positions, and it's it'll be just interesting to see how that's developed and managed over the next while.
Absolutely. Corky, enjoy the match. You're also covering the Ulster-Leinster game tomorrow night. You mentioned there Scott Penny going out in an incredible back row with Rhys Roddick and Josh van der Fleer. Should be another incredible game. Could see him Barlacoon back for Ulster. Enjoy it and keep warm.
Thanks, Corky. Now, I think it's time to go back to Greg Allen. The dust has just settled on Phil Healy's performance. We're hearing absolutely brilliant things about her, how composed and confident she was. Has she came of age now, Greg?
I think there's no question that, you know, when you reach your first major championship final and you do so in the style in which she did by winning her semi-final, I think, you know, you have to say that she has come of age, and she's 26. It's about time, because this talent has been there. We saw that in the 100 metre 11.28 that she set in Santry. That was 3 years ago. 22.99 for 200 metres. They are really the type of speed, that's the type of speed you need for 400 metres. And she showed it today. It was a huge asset to her to get into position after the 200 metre break, and when she got into the situation second to Amma Pipi going into that second lap, you always felt this is a test of the strength that she has mentally, physically. Has that work that she's been doing for 4 years on the 400 metres come to this type of fruition? And it has. But a dose of reality is required here. Femke Ball clocked 51.17 seconds, more than a second quicker than Healy. That was about 8 metres of track, and she jogged across the line, the fastest qualifier for the final. She was the number one 400 metre hurdler in the world last year. She is the number one in the world over 400 metres indoors this winter. She's going to be the gold medal favourite. But Justyna Świetlik-Ercetic, the Polish record holder, because she's just set the Polish record, who won the other semi-final in 51.34, also a full second quicker than Phil Healy ran. So to me, it looks like gold and silver will be down to those two. But the bronze is wide open, and there's a chance that Phil Healy, with a good lane draw, hopefully lanes 4, 5 or 6, she should get one of those because of winning her semi-final. There's a chance that there's a medal on. I think gold and silver, it would take, I think, a tangle of legs for those medals not to go to Femke Bol and Justyna Świetlik-Ercetic. But Phil Healy has a chance of a medal tomorrow.
Okay, Greg, thanks so much for those updates. And if anyone wants to find out about the 800 metre heats and get live commentary on the 1500 metre final, go to RTE Sports Extra on RTE Radio 1 this evening, starting at 19:30. It's actually RTE Radio 1 Extra, I might add, featuring commentary on Munster versus Connacht in the Pro 14. That is all we have time for. Blanna Tracy is up next.